Covent Garden. I find myself here once again. It was just over 3 years ago when I first stumbled upon this shop that is behind me. You don't know what's behind me, you're on audio. It's called Vivo Barefoot. And I've been semi-regular ever since. I say semi-regular because they sell footwear, but the biggest problem with the footwear for me is it doesn't wear out. at least not yet. I'm still running in a pair of shoes that I bought 3 years ago, and I'm seeing new models and I'm seeing new stuff. I'm seeing new technology. They appear to be lighter now than before, and it's no good to me because I'm still running in the same shoes. And I wanted to speak to somebody from Vivo Barefoot, so I dragged Jamie out of the shop. Jamie, how are you?
Very well. Yeah, it's good to get out of the office and do something a bit more interesting.
I'm guessing it's not your normal complaint. The shoes aren't wearing out.
No, exactly. We obviously try and make the shoes as solid as possible, which doesn't always help the sort of the people that want to sell more and more and more. But, you know, it's important to make good quality shoes.
And I guess some of that comes from the fact that the whole barefoot running kind of system, it requires you to have very little between you and the road, and therefore the structure and the laminated soles that you see and all the glue and all the rest of it, a lot of that is missing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's stripped down completely to basically only protect the skin on the bottom of your feet from heat or glass or something sharp. So all of that is completely removed. Absolutely.
When I first got the shoes, it was because I visited a bespoke shoemaker in Austria, Ballon Belaint. He was meant to be the best lace maker in the world. Right. And I spoke with him at great length about what he did, because he was making dress shoes for sports people, because they really take care over their shoes and they needed them a little bit wider. They needed to feel freedom kind of within the shoe. And I said to him, so have I got to spend 2,000 euros? Is that what I've got to do to give my feet the best possible kind of care? He says, no, if you want to give your feet the best possible care, don't wear shoes. And I'm like, wait a minute, you are a shoe seller. He says, because thankfully the world is full of broken glass and dog poo. Would you go along with that?
No. Well, I go along with the bit that the world is full of dog shit and broken glass, but yeah, the barefoot thing, I mean, I experienced it myself. I was grew up in Cornwall, came to London, started working, did a couple of jobs, but found myself at Vivo. Still believed in the barefoot, pure barefoot, you know, not wearing any shoes. It's great. I got the tube when I first moved. Used to get the tube, used to get all sorts of funny looks.
You actually were walking around
fully
London totally barefoot.
Barefoot. Yeah. And it was great. I kind of enjoyed it. My now ex-girlfriend at the time wasn't really keen on it. And then one day it was a Friday evening, on the way home, was running barefoot, which I did quite a lot, ran past a pub, stood in a huge lump of glass. Luckily I had shoes in my bag, so I could actually put them on and stop the blood, and you know, blood was pooling in the bottom of my shoes.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, barefoot's kind of, it's a dream, it's a bit of a romantic thing, you know, you're like, oh, we're at one, but it's actually dangerous, and I've learned the hard way. So
save it for the beaches.
Exactly.
Well, even some of the beaches. Yeah, you got to watch some of the beaches. That's really interesting, because for me, being, you know, a hippie traveller, yeah, whereas the closest I've come to being totally barefoot in areas that I knew I was, but the rest of the time I'd wear as minimal sandal as possible, sometimes made by a local from a car tire, which was the big thing, particularly in Africa. Poisonous spiders were the issue for that. I do have a story I shall tell you about being bitten in my bare feet. So the whole coming, then Googling and trying to find out for me if anybody was actually doing super minimal footwear, There was not a lot around. And then I found Vivo Barefoot, and I was really sceptical at first, because when I Googled, it looked like Vivo Barefoot was a part of Clarks. It is and it isn't, because it was founded by one of the Clarks, Galahad, is that right?
That is true, yeah. I mean, there's links to Clarks by the name of our managing director, who is a Clark. Our chairman is the last, he's called Lancelot, and he's the last clerk to run the family business as it was. Yeah, I mean, they're linked by that, those two important people, and our designer is the cousin of Galahad, so yeah, but I mean, we're a completely separate company where we do our own thing. You know, we're challenging them. Their kids' business is huge. You know, everyone gets measured at Clark's. We believe that our shoes are superior to all other footwear manufacturers in what they do for your foot and for the sort of natural state of the foot.
Can I just stop you there? Because you, if someone's listening to you right now, they're going to go, yeah, but you're selling them and you work for the company. Can I tell you that I do actually have a pair of the kids' shoes in my bag, which I bought and paid for, and I bought and paid for the first pair of shoes for my children over a year ago, and I was genuinely a little bit freaked out by how they took to this. Yeah. Because my lad, naturally, like most people, does not want to have shoes on his feet. So he gets home, he gets in, he rips them off as quick as possible, socks as well, and then he'll run around garden everywhere. He'll still come and get me in my little garden office, a shed at the bottom of the garden, walking over spiky stones. Yeah. I've stopped telling him off now. Oh, you'll hurt yourself. Because quite often, if he's been wearing his Vivos, he won't bother to take them off because he probably doesn't feel as restricted. So where did we suddenly decide that we needed to create these little boxes for our feet and entrap what seems to be natural growth? If you look at the photos,
it's puzzling. It's absolutely puzzling, and it's exciting to try and unravel that myth that everyone follows. You know, it's like that's why I work for the company. I'm not that interested in selling shoes to people. I just want to change the way people move. And like, when I haven't got kids myself, but I've got nieces and nephews that are at the very key stages of their development. So they're 2, 4, and 5. And so when you observe them barefoot running around, you know, completely natural, you put them in, not anymore, but my sisters, you know, they put them in a Croc or in a Clark's, or it doesn't matter about the brand, but anything that's rigid and got cushion-like padding, they decline or recede their development noticeably within a moment of putting that shoe on. It could be 6 months, 12 months of physical development is completely washed away. And it's like that in itself just shows what's wrong with shoes.
I come from loosely an engineering, but I started doing engineering before I kind of dropped out of everything. And for me, one of the biggest selling sentences to why minimal footwear is key to healthy feet was somebody saying, what happens to an arch when you support it? It loses all of its strength.
Yeah.
You support an arch. The last thing an arch wants is support.
Yeah.
And yet, it has been programmed into my mind. Yeah. Has it got arch support? Has it got arch support? Oh, this will really support your kid's feet. And I'm thinking, why? Were we all born with a deficiency? I know some people require that because they do have disabilities.
Yeah.
But we're like treating everybody with a disability in that way. Well, you need to support your arch. It can't possibly look after itself.
Yeah, I think as soon as you get on that, the cycle or the development pattern of being as a young child, and if you've got rigid supportive shoes and then you develop into a reasonably healthy adult, then you're going to have that weakness the whole of your life. So it's not as simple as saying, oh, just take your shoes off and go barefoot. That's what Chris McDougall did in Born to Run. Great book, great story. There's actually some quite complex things that need to happen in order for you to get all the way back to your 2-year-old, 3-year-old child that was natural and healthy. So it's a longer conversation. It's why we invest so much time and effort into educating people, is because it's not just about taking your shoes off. It's about strengthening your feet and re-engaging your foot with your brain.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how disconnected people are with that whole link, you know, brain to foot.
When I was here a week or so ago, I was speaking to Mark, who has been... Mark, you were wandering around periscoping us right now at this very moment. You showed me a photograph when I came in the store.
Yeah.
What was it?
It was a link to the Hoffman. He was a doctor. In 1905, he
was starting to see lots of foot problems, yeah, surgery. And he put it down to affluence, people spending more money on fashion shoes, and he thought there was a link there. So he needed to know for sure, so he went to, I think it was Central Africa, because he needed to see what does a foot look like that's never been, an adult foot look like that's never been in a shoe. And actually, as the images, which I think I showed, if anyone wants to have a look at that, just Google, just put in Hoffman barefoot 1905, and images, you'll see the images come up of a classic shoe-shaped foot, which is...
You didn't say it was, but it is shaped like a V, and I think that's I think that's accidental.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was a good point, good observations, yeah. So what Chris is talking about there is that the healthy African foot, which is never been in a shoe, was like a big baby foot. So if you go into Google Images, I encourage you all to all do this, just put in Hoffman barefoot 1905, look at the image of and the comparison of the adult African foot from 110 years ago and the case history next to it, and then go up, bring yourself bang up to date and go into Google Images and put baby's feet in and just look at that modern and the mainly Caucasian feet there, that modern V-shaped baby foot you'll see in the images is exactly the same shape from the African foot from 110 years ago. So separated by 110 years, seemingly, you know, it's separated by 110 years and culture, and yet the foot's the same shape.
So are we crippled by fashion? Is that too strong a statement?
I'll tell you what, this is interesting, because it's very easy to sound really boring and beige around this subject. And here's the thing, what Viva Barefoot thinks. First off, by selling children's shoes, we're trying to not destroy children's feet from the off. And the adults that come to us, and there's a spectrum of screw-up, should we say, we're trying to, through better shoe design, trying to give people closer to what would have been their natural foot shape if they never worn a shoe. Quite seriously, I don't think anyone's going to get the foot they would have had if they'd never worn a shoe, even if they start off in their 20s. But I'll tell you this, and going by our customers, the amount of shoes we sell year on year, everyone gets something back which would have been closer to their natural foot shape. In that group of adults that maybe want to run in our shoes, we say to them, walk in them first. And
that's exactly what I did, but yeah, probably for too long in a way, because I 3 years I've been walking. I wish I'd run earlier.
Well, some people will never run in our shoes. It's an ugly truth we have to tell. There's a sizable minority of people. Yes, they've got some of their foot function back. Yes, they're feeling better about themselves. Yes, their lower back pain's probably gone and some knee pain's gone. But there is a minority of people that will never be able to run in our shoes because they haven't got the compliance to deal with the forces of even slow running. And it's something that we have to be very honest about, and we are very honest about it.
That was interesting, because when I did come to your, you've got a running machine in the back, yeah, and I was shown some foot exercises. I wonder if that's what the guy was looking for at the time, because he told me I had a fully flexible
compliant foot.
Maybe he said, yeah, compliant, I can't remember the time, but he says, you know, you should have a go at running. And yeah, for me, it's like someone who's only ever run away from baddies, I'd be like, right, yeah, me running. And now I'm slapping myself in the head, because there's no point in me timing myself now. Yeah. If somebody says, when you're in your 40s, you're only ever going to get slower. Yeah. I am actually, I've yet to hit my peak, I think, because it's early days for me. But I do wish I'd had a go earlier. It's kind of a weird revelation for me. Do you both run?
Yeah.
I speak to Jamie. Jamie actually I like his approach to running, actually. It's really healthy. So he's actually done a jungle ultra. But for Jamie, it's not all about...
A jungle ultra, that's like, what, a 50?
Oh, he did really well. In fact, if I remember rightly, Jamie, of course, wore a Viva Barefoot shoe, but there was lots of quite decent ultra runners there. Jamie was there to finish and to have the experience. And the amount of the runners there, particularly the serious ones, they were almost wallowing in the glory of their foot problems and blisters. And which was the news, Jamie? There was like
a hardcore
honor.
I am.
Yeah, it was. Well, am I right? Is that my connection, right?
This is a couple of years ago. Went out. To,
how many miles?
It was 230k.
230k. So 120.
A lot of miles.
1 mile.
Something like that. So it was more than that, self-sufficient, hammock, food, clothes in your backpack.
Oh, this is that sounds right up my street. Yeah. In about 5 years.
But yeah, so that every morning there's lots of really, really good medics there. Every morning and evening they'd spend person to person between 10 and 20 minutes popping blisters, going through toenails, you know.
That'll be my athletic running name, Lance Blister.
And you know, I was like, you know, maybe I was lucky, but nothing happened to my feet. I got stronger as the time.
Were you wearing a pair of road shoes, or did you go for something with some grip in the jungle?
No, I had the trail shoes.
The ones I've just been salivating over, like that.
Exactly, those the trail freaks. I actually took a sample pair that were pre-production before we brought them out. But yeah, they're like incredible. And yeah, my take on running is it's quite boring to talk about, and it's very personal.
Yeah, I found this.
I use it as a mode of transport, and that's it.
Wow, yeah, that's a really good point. This is why it amazed me when I ended up reading my first ever book on running, which was Running Free by Richard Asquith. And then recently I picked up Born to Run because someone said you can read it if you're not a runner, because it is just a good adventure story. And I was thinking, this is really interesting because I'm getting really excited and I'm just watching people glaze over. Because when I say it's amazing, so that's why I decided to do a YouTube video and throw it out there. I've done 100 days of running. I'm genuinely quite excited, and I've only connected with other runners.
Yeah,
because they kind of get it.
Yeah,
but you know,
oh, bully for you. You can run.
It's personal. It's such a personal thing, and there's far more interesting things.
Yeah. I mean, you never. The thing I like about running is it's.
I've already boring him already.
No, you never regret a run.
You never regret a run. No. I come from an Italian kind of Roman Catholic-y background, despite being atheist. And I look to worry at everything. And one of the reasons why I was going to try and come and do a course with one of your experts in inverted hoofadoofers. I don't believe anybody's an expert. We're always learning. That's why I've got amateur written on my T-shirt right now. Because I am fearful of hitting you. They say 80% of runners, allegedly, will, if they're using your standard running shoe, is going to get some kind of injury.
Just for accuracy,
okay.
You're looking at, we're being fair, between 19 and 79% of runners in any given year get injured. In my experience,
how many? Between
19,
okay,
and 79%.
Okay.
Now,
so it can be up to 79.
The truth is, in my opinion, it's closer to the 79.
Right,
And that hasn't changed in 30-odd years. So
what about with people who come and not necessarily just buy from your shop, because there are other brands, let's name some, of minimalist footwear?
There's,
you might be stocking one of them.
There's Luna, there's Vibram, there's Scora.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, there's some good guys out there, and there's some confused guys out there,
And the thing is, what I get when I come here is knowledge and information, not just a sales pitch, and that's what I really appreciate. So with those, is there any stats around people who are using minimal footwear?
The truth of it is that if you spent a lifetime of wearing shoes that have changed the shape of your foot and the function of your foot, and the shapes you make, which is also to do with too much padding, creates a, again, too technical, causes a disconnect between your foot and brain, that you implement speed, whether you're fast walking or slow running or fast running, you'll tend to overstride. So just because it's natural, it's not your normal, hence transition. So actually, we get lots of people here quite happy to walk in our shoes, and a lot of the time they don't want to run in them, but they want to tap into the stuff we do with technique. And some then come on to say, well, actually, I might want to transition into the running. But then that person, we can't gild the lily, can't sugarcoat this, then that person who might be do 20 miles a week, or they might do 100 miles a week, and everything in between, that person then has to understand that they have to start again, even if they're young and fit and lean. Everyone has to start again.
I know, I've realised that recently dropping right down to almost running no distance.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you talk to runners, they don't want to... If you've got a guy doing a significant amount of miles per week, and you go, well, look, mate, you've got to really start again, they're like, it's not for me then. But
I'm glad I did it at the beginning then. Yeah,
exactly. That 3 years of walking around is the perfect transition.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you if you really want to do this when you're 60 or 70 or 80, then who cares about doing 40 miles this week or 60 miles next week? It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
So that's why you have to convince people beyond the next 2 years and take them way back and get them in the deep campfire squat and basic toe exercises, and it's such a slow game, which is not sexy. It's not like a golden or silver bullet, you know. It's not like, oh, this is the answer, we're going to do it today. It's like, well, yeah, if you stick to it, in a couple of years you might be adequate.
And it's also, what's the desired outcome from running? For yours, it's a means of getting from A to B faster without having to pay for the tube or the bus. For you?
Well, I used to, I'm 46 now, so when I started running for a club back in, really got going in the early 80s, but started in 79, I was a very average club runner. But it's like Jamie said, it was very personal. Yeah. I was trying to be the best I could, and I put as much effort as in someone, an elite runner. Yeah. Just wasn't good enough. And then, I'll be honest with you now, I've put a bit of timber on, I'm a family man. My running's pretty similar, very similar to Jamie's now. I just run to get to A to B, and I enjoy my running way more now than I used to. And I do it.
It's funny, yes. The moment I stopped being a professional photographer, where photography was all I did, it's now a huge part of my job. I love it 20,000 times more. But for me, running was always to get healthy and lose a bit of weight. So I can run a mile a day. It's gonna have an effect, because you look at all the technology that's coming out right now and all the studies, it's saying just don't sit down for so long, just stand up. If I'm doing a little bit more than standing up, I'm happy.
Brings us on to, actually, because I think it's fair to mention him. We've mentioned Galahad and Lancelot, his father, and Asher, the shoe designer. I think at this point it's really fair, an important part of the tapestry that is so far Viva Barefoot is Lee Saxby. He's like a consultant that we sort of tap into every now and then. He's pretty much been on this 20-year quest. And, it's a hard listen to Lee sometimes, because he's quite uncompromising about it. Everyone wants to know a little bit, whether you're an elite runner or whether you're someone that just wants to transition or have a bit deeper understanding. He's got together with a gentleman called Dr. Mitt Wilkinson. And you don't have to be... They've got a website called leesaxby.com. If you go on there, whether you're a professor or whether you're Joe Jogger and everything in between, there is something on there for everybody, and gives you a bit of a deeper understanding about this subject and about transition and about the ugly truths around this subject.
I'm hoping that I can get to chat with some of these people, because for me, this personal journey of myself, the realisation that I don't just have to walk everywhere and that I can actually run, was quite a revelation. The fact that it doesn't hurt as much as I thought it would, the fact that there is a group of people who come from a very, very long line, if you think of what Clark's did, and you shared some research with me recently about the... You talked about, because I was like, oh, you know, I'll take my kids to Clark's and get them sized up. And now I'm buying shoes from here. And you said, well, actually, Clark's knew what they were doing in, was 18, it 18?
1885, 86. We found this poster from, 125 years ago. Yes. And it was pretty much of the language of its day. It was talking about what the ideal shoe is. That's pretty much what Viva was doing. So at some stage, shoe, I would imagine, or clearly Clark's, and I wouldn't mind betting other shoe manufacturers, you know, 100 or so years ago, they were making shoes which worked with your foot, not against it, and just give what a foot needed, which was a bit of weather protection and puncture protection. And so somewhere in the last 125 years, through fashion and... I don't think there's any conspiracy. I think even with cushioned running shoes, by the way, when it all got kicked off by Nike, I don't think there's a conspiracy. I just think there's lots of bad logic going around fashion mixed in there.
Well, maybe this is why Nike is bringing back the Cortez. If you remember, a big favourite with minimalist runners.
Which was actually, if I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that was... Because the founders of Nike were actually... the original distributors for ASICS. Phil Knight and Bill Bowerman were the original distributors before they started Nike, of ASICS. So when they closed down that, they went to ASICS and said that the shoe, which I think they then went and called...
The Cortez, weirdly, after some mass murdering...
We put a tick on it. Yeah. But I could be wrong, I might have the history a little bit wrong there.
No, I'm...
Padding actually was a... Bill Mann was a decent running coach. He was an overweight American at Oregon University, whose ex-athlete was Phil Knight, who he went on to find Nike with. But there was no conspiracy. He thought, genuinely, this would help people. And it clearly didn't. Because if you put too much padding, as we know, between the foot and the floor, too much shoe between the foot, it can cause overstride.
And also stability issues, I noticed. I mean, the fact that I was in Spain recently and I did video this, and I was nearly twisting my ankle running over rocks. And the moment I put my flip-flops on, they weren't standard flip-flops, they were from you guys.
Can we turn this around a little bit? Because where I originally got to know you was about your 100 day and seeing your own experience. If you could talk a bit about that, that'd be quite... Turn it around on you, if that's all right.
Yeah, well, I was trying to wrap up, but God, you know, it's the longest story I've done for a while. It can be edited down and reposted later on. My own personal experience is the fact that I was in Spain and I'd felt that I was using these shoes which had been sold to me after going into a shoe shop that I felt were caring for and pampering me, and they'd got me on the conveyor belt, and they seemed really impressed by the fact that I was landing predominantly on the front of my feet.
Freudian slip, conveyor belt.
A conveyor belt. Yeah, maybe. Exactly. Another one on the conveyor belt, passing through and leaving with a pair of shoes. And I was actually lied to when he said, Brooks, one of the most... he worked for Brooks and he was there for the day, and he says one of the single most ethical shoe businesses because we've just built a big green office, which was true, but when I looked on Ethical Shopper, not very. And so when I looked at kind of what he was saying to me and the fact he said that you're going to need this, I left with a neutral shoe, and I felt taller. I felt big in the world.
Three inches of cushion would do that.
I know. It's like running on pillows, though. Running on pillows, there was a disconnect, and I noticed in maybe day 15 of running that my knee was hurting for the first time in my life. I've never had knee problems. Snowboarding, all kinds of stuff. I'll break ribs, not knees. And then my hip started hurting. Oh, my God. While the granddad was having hip replacements, and a friend of mine has just had a hip replacement, same age, and I'm thinking, what, is this natural? I've never had issues like this. So I decided I didn't want to not do my running for 100 days, but because I was on holiday, I had a pair of, I call them flip-flops, they're not normal flip-flops, they are bought from you guys, well expensive back then, much cheaper now, and they've got like a strap along the back of your heel so that they don't flip and flop and you can actually run in them. And that's all I had because I wear them around the pool, and I thought, can I run in these? And I went out, I'm on rocks, I'm on tracks, the sun is beating down, I'm feeling like some kind of running legend to myself, obviously no one was looking, and I came back and nothing hurt. And so I thought, I'll try this another day, and nothing hurt. And that's when I shot a little video saying, that's it, I'm leaving my shoes in Spain. And I left my running shoes in Spain because I knew at home I had some minimal shoes which I'd bought from you guys 3 years ago that I've been using for walking. And they're as good now as they were then, which brings me back to the beginning of the conversation. They're wearing out very, very, very slowly, whereby in only maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 days, I'd lost a lot of the tread on my running shoe already. Is it the one that I bought from Brooks?
Right. Yeah, and is the other thing is about how you're landing, how you're making contact with the ground. So if you hit the ground pretty hard, no shoe's going to last that long. Yeah. If you're making contact nice and smoothly, then yeah, they last longer.
And putting big shoes on meant I couldn't run how I naturally wanted to, which is the way I walk, from wearing minimal footwear, because the heel was getting in the way. It was catching, and I found myself going heel toe, which I don't know, I'm just assuming that's what caused the injury, but I'm hoping to speak to some people who actually know more about this, because my speculation is my adventure and my own experience. So yeah, what kind of a weird thing to learn in your 40s, that maybe there is a different way to walk, and that it has such a big knock-on effect. You've obviously stuck with the shoes, and you don't do barefoot anymore, as in bare.
Yeah, well, after the incident that I explained.
You recovered from that, all right?
Yeah, fine. 6 weeks out, it was fine. But, I mean, once you... It's a good thing for our business, is once you try a pair, and once you get into it, it's difficult to go back. I used to work in a skateboarding shop, and used to get all the skate shoes, still got them in the attic, but you just put them back on and it's alien. And it's just,
I know we look like a sales team outside of changing the laces on the boots I've got. These are because I needed something smart. I bought your shoes again, and do you know why I bought a pair of boots? Because I saw a video on YouTube, and there was this amazing rapper, beatboxer, massive hair.
Reggie Watts.
He's an absolute legend. I think he was on TED wearing your shoes.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah,
did you give him those, or did he buy them?
No, I tried to get in contact with him and give him some more, but he's just a pure fan. Like, there's so many people out there that they're not that interested in, you know, the free flow wear these and we'll talk, you know, say some nice things about them. People just like them for what they are. That makes our job a lot easier.
Well, I knew about your shoes because I had some of you, but when I saw he was wearing boots, I thought, I could have some boots.
which ties in with the customers. I mean, I'm not going to quote the figures because it might be slightly wrong, but the retention rate is very high. People tend to find Viva Barefoot and they tend to stick with Viva Barefoot. And then they have definitely more than one pair of shoes in their cupboard.
Well, we all have different shoes for different reasons. That's the only thing that's probably going to keep Viva you guys going, apart from the fact on the masses of people that have yet to kind of realise that maybe crippling your feet, and that's I'm not a doctor.
Yeah,
but, you know.
I think there's another important thing, because often it feels like it has to be barefoot. That's the only healthy way to do it. But there's a really good rule, the 80-20 rule, is that if you're healthy, and this is not just footwear or Vivos, this is for life really. If you're 80% of the time healthy and doing the right thing, so we'd say from a footwear point of view, wearing Vivos, then that leaves 20% of the time. Just go for it. Like, wear dress shoes, you know, like, whenever you need to wear them. It's not going to, like, break you, because 80% of the time, you're perfect. And that counts for diet, for weekend...
It's not all or nothing. Yeah. And that's really good that you should say that, because tonight I'm going out for quite a few beers after not drinking for this whole week, thinking, yes, I can do that.
Exactly.
But I do get a little bit of guilt, because I've got some seriously, seriously nice Pozu's ethical shoes, which, I mean, I know that everybody down the line of the actual manufacturer of these shoes, yet the sole is a coconut husk. You know, it's all like biodegradable, the whole thing, and it's vegan, even though I'm not a vegetarian. So I can still wear them a little bit.
Absolutely. We used to sell Posies in our store before we were solely Vivo Barefoot. You know, we had Posies because they're amazing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We went purer.
And
you should do a crossover.
Maybe.
Watch your space. No, that wasn't a scoop.
that's what we say to customers, is that 80-20 is spot on. Because you'll get a valid question, a point people make in the shop. So you're telling me I might have to throw all my fashion shoes away? No. If you want to wear a winkle picker and your partner wants to wear a high heel at the weekend, then wear it. It's what you do most of the time, is key, 80-20.
Yeah, you say that, but I know that when I put my old shoes on, I feel like I might as well wear the shoe boxes.
right, yeah.
It's probably better for me, actually, to wear the shoe boxes, because there's no support. There's no flat. Listen, I could talk to you guys for ages. I'm going to bring an offline recorder that means I can edit and come and get some more information and pick your brains. Just thanks for taking the time to talk to me. Thanks for still being here when so many shops come and go, when you're dealing ultimately with a niche idea, which all some of the biggest ideas in the world that have revolutionised us start out as niche ideas. It's been going like 20 years, the barefoot movement, or more?
Well, obviously, hundreds if you look at the tribal
movement. But
I mean, the first drawing was put down in actually 1999 by Tim Brennan. He was a childhood schoolboy friend of Galahad Clark. And actually, the first shoe, 2324, if I'm not mistaken, was sold before our competitors.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, we're first to market with this whole philosophy and design.
I didn't know. The fact you haven't told me that, despite being someone with a bucket head full of facts, is that's interesting. So first on the market with barefoot and still going. So that's something to go, you know, to be proud about. Jamie, thank you very much. Mark, thank you.
Enjoyed that. Thank you.